Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our speakers, Micah Blake McCurdy of HockeyViz.com. At the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Michael will deliver a talk titled Skater Impact on Shot Locations. Michael, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
All right, so why don't we get started by just telling me a little bit about your background. How did you end up in academia, and how did you end up studying hockey and working on hockey?
So my background is in pure mathematics, and I did physics and math in my undergrad, and then got gradually moved towards pure mathematics. And in the course of doing mathematics, I got drawn into graphical languages for calculations, so doing replacing strings of symbols with pictures instead. And so when I decided to leave academia, when it's extremely hard to find tenure track math jobs, and when I decided to leave, it was natural to find a place where I could do something more visually inclined and less abstract. And the upshot of that was hockey.
Why hockey? I mean, you from Canada? I see you're from Canada right now. So you went to school in Australia. What is it about hockey that drew you to work on it?
It was so. I've always been a hockey fan, although you know, as is typical for Canadian kids. But I my parents could never afford skates. I never got to play as a child, and you don't have to pay a great deal of attention in Canada to get a lot of hockey content. But then when I went to do my PhD in Australia, all of a sudden I found that I was surprised to miss it, that I was cut off from something that I'd considered, you know, really, really basic. And so, of course, I had to seek it out myself. And when you do that, you engage at a different level. And so I became a much bigger hockey fan in a strange way from afar than I ever had been when I was in Canada.
Okay, so how did you get going then? I mean, what kind of projects did you work on? And again, specific to HockeyViz, what did you start working on first, and how did you publish it, and how did you make it available to the public to read?
So I started first and foremost working purely for my own interest. I'm a Senators fan, and I was especially back when I was in Australia, and I wanted to know how likely they were to make up a particular set of points in a tight playoff race. And so I started thinking about how I might model that. And then I started doing it more seriously as a hobby, but then I wanted to know if the data I was taking was right. And because I've such a visual inclination to attacking problems, I couldn't see a way to make sure that my data was right unless I looked at it. And so then I started making data visualizations for my own benefit because I can't bear to look at tables and numbers. And as a way of keeping my data clean, I started making sure that I was doing everything for all 30 teams all the time. So I wasn't only working with teams I was familiar with. And then largely out of, you know, wanting to be more useful, I started sharing that information with other people. At first in a very small way, just using Facebook and a handful of friends of mine. And once I joined Twitter, then it really exploded. And I found a whole community of people who were interested in talking about hockey.
So first of all, sorry about the Senators. Who do you got in the finals right now? Who are you expecting is going to pull that off?
I expect Pittsburgh will likely win. I'm personally devoted to PK Subban. I hope he wins, but I think they're rightfully underdogs in that series, especially now that Ryan Johansson is out.
Yeah, it's great. I'm a casual hockey fan, but I love watching the playoffs. It's a great sport. So, specific to visualization, I mean that's something that I don't think I've encountered as much with the people that I've talked to so far. But can you describe how visualization fits into the whole communicating analytics findings and how that can be effective more than, like you said, numbers and charts and things like that? It's kind of an artistic element of it, and yet I imagine that's more effective at getting the point across that you're trying to make sometimes. Is that right?
It can be. It definitely is more effective at getting your point across, but it can also invite a lot of distraction and a lot of complication. So there's a certain opportunity cost if you like, to that sort of thing, where, you know, because people are much more critical of, oh, you laid this out wrong, or, oh, this looks ugly. You know, I get a certain bit of pushback on that than they are about some sort of table of numbers, you know, which they'll just happily ignore. But part of why I like it is that, well, on the one hand, there's just a certain crafty element where it's fun to make something that's beautiful. And I like to say that programming is crafts for people who are bad with their hands, which certainly fits me. But then there's also an aspect of context. You know, tables are great if you want to look up numbers, but of course, any kind of sports analytics that you do, you don't really care about a particular number in and of itself. You know, even really concrete things like, you know, my team scored 4 goals is itself extremely unhelpful and tells you very little, unless you have some additional numbers like, well, how many goals did the other team score, for instance? You know, and even then you want to know, well, is that a lot more than normal? Is that a lot less than normal? And anytime you start asking questions like that, now you don't just want to show people a number or two, you want to show people a whole pattern of numbers, a whole distribution of numbers. And now the standard tools are the graphical ones, and so it kind of all fits together that way.
So did you train in any sort of graphic design or visual arts as part of your training to end up being able to do this, or is it mostly still programming based, or how do you incorporate learning how to visualize data in part of the overall development of your skill set?
It's awkward in places. It's not a sort of perfected art by any means. That intersection of graphic design and mathematics and data science is kind of thinly populated. I certainly learned a great deal from a handful of masters, especially Edward Tufte, who published a sequence of extremely, extremely high quality books about how to display information visually. A lot of it is self-taught, which is to say taught entirely by feedback from other people. You learn, you know, what goes over well, what communicates points clearly, what confuses people. And you have to walk a line there too, because sometimes things being confusing is good when the data you're trying to show is confusion. You know, if the point you're trying to make with a graph is that a particular coach has no idea what he's doing with his lines, then, you know, a certain amount of confusion is good in the graph that you put out. So you have to walk a kind of tension there. But there isn't a really established thing. Like I don't think you could go to some sort of education which would say, this is my degree in this. Although it was a convenient thing for me that my math PhD contained so much graphics in it, just because my discipline, which is called category theory, has within it this sub-discipline of graphical languages.
Okay. So let's talk about your website here, hockeyviz.com. That's hockeyviz.com. If people go to your site, what are they going to find? Where should they start looking? What do you have on there?
So first and foremost, I have predictions about what's going to happen. That's the number one purpose that I put all the data that I take to is to try to estimate, to make models that estimate how likely certain teams are to win. So right now you can go and you can look and you can see that the Penguins have a 70% chance of winning the Stanley Cup. Now that the playoffs are almost over, there's not a great deal left to predict. There's only 6 games at most left in the season. But so you'll see that in the future department. And as part of that, and as part of trying to understand discussions about hockey, I've developed a whole repertoire of descriptive statistics, which will tell you things like who played with whom for your particular team, going back as far as my database goes for about a decade. You know, which defenders were paired together, which forward lines were paired together, who played against whom, how did they do? And so there's a surprising amount of disagreement about really basic things like, you know, I was expecting when I got into hockey analytics that a lot of the arguments would be about what should we do going forward? And a surprising amount of arguments are instead, what actually happened last year, last night, you know, last decade. And so there's a lot of work that goes into purely descriptive work and trying to encapsulate large amounts of information into visualizations that let you say at a glance, oh, I see, this is the overall picture of the New Jersey Devils defense from that year. And then being able to come away with new questions that will lead you farther instead of just being confused.
Okay, great. So just reading through your website, I found a passage talking about why you make your work available for free online. And I thought that was a really interesting point that I wanted to follow up with you on. Why are you so adamant about that? And how widely shared is that outlook on your work?
So my politics on that point come from academia, where it's understood that you don't hide your ideas from anybody. If anything, you shout them from the hilltops for a decade until people finally listen to you. You know, there's very little angle for secrecy, and which resonates with me personally because I was raised in that milieu. But of course, I make a distinction too because I'm trying to make a living doing hockey analytics. So not all of the website is free, but all of the research is free. So if I come up with a new work, so right now I've been working on. Recently, I presented a talk about goalies, and related to that, I'm talking in. At Stephen's point about shot locations. And so all of that research is public because I think there's no way to drive the conversation forward publicly unless you do publish everything that you do. And so I think selling research to the public is a bit much because you're already asking the public to learn from you when they read your research. So, and all of the rest of society where we have that paradigm where people are learning, it's much more difficult. I'm sort of butchering this point, but it's much more difficult to charge people money and also say, you know, and now you must devote the way you think to the way that I think. And I think the only way that you can freely exchange information is if you say, this is what I've learned, take it for what you want. You will see that it's correct and you won't feel any added pressures of having to pay money for it.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, you read enough about the evolution of analytics over the last 10, 15 years and how it was very public. A lot of people publishing on websites and on social media and whatnot. And then as a lot of these people started getting snatched up by professional franchises, a lot of that work went away and became proprietary and hidden behind walls. And that's maybe had somewhat of a dampening effect on the vibrancy of the community. Is that fair to say, are you concerned about that at all?
Yeah, I'm not especially concerned about it, but it is true. There is a constant flux there because people have conflicting motivations. You asked earlier, and I didn't address it directly, but how widely shared is my sentiment about public research? And it's very broadly shared in the sense that almost everybody wants to have research available for the public. And almost everybody who does research wants to make it available for the public, but not everybody's in a position where they can. Even my position, which is full-time and funded by the public, is a little bit precarious. It's you wouldn't quite call it a living, least of all a great living, but I'm treating it like a small business where I'm going to turn it into something like that, where most people don't have the luxury to devote that kind of time. And so you have this sort of hobbyist, professional, uneasy blurring. And I think as long as people are cognizant of the fact that not everybody is operating under the kind of freedom that you would like, then I think it's going to be okay and people can work through those hassles. In a way, we're all learning collectively all the same arguments that went into things like the founding of universities back in the day, where you need to have that freedom. You need to have that kind of security ahead of time so that you can conduct research in a public way. But now we're doing it all again in a new sphere, in a new area with new people. But a lot of those lessons societally are already learned. And if we can draw on that social history, then I think a lot of those problems can be solved.
All right. Before you mentioned, you hinted at the topic of your talk that you'll be giving at our conference, and that topic again is skater impact on shot locations. What can you tell us about right now, just as a brief overview for people who might be interested in attending?
So one of the surprising arguments in hockey is can players actually make their life easier for their goaltender or not? And very surprisingly, the evidence on this is somewhat conflicted. On the one hand, some goaltenders certainly put up markedly better results when certain players are on the ice and markedly worse when other ones are on the ice. And exactly who is to blame for that, if blame is the word I want, is surprisingly tricky to discern. And so I'm trying to address that at a very basic level of trying to figure out what exactly do players have impacts on. How far does skater impact go to determining what a goaltender sees when they play? And so the short answer is a little bit murky, and the answer is a little bit of an influence on skater on shot locations, less than you might expect.
Okay, sounds good. Looking forward to learning more. What else are you looking to tackle in the future? What other kind of hockey analytics or any kind of sports analytics problems or questions do you have that you'd like to pursue?
So I think for the foreseeable future, I'll mostly be confining myself to hockey. It's very tempting to branch out, especially when so many other sports are so much more popular, especially in America. But the amount of domain knowledge you need to not make a fool of yourself is really surprising. I don't know as much about hockey as people who've been steeped in it their whole lives. And still every scrap of what I do know is vital for making sensible judgments about the thing, even when I'm working in a purely quote unquote statistical way. So for the future though, a lot of my work is focused around goaltending at the moment, because I feel like there's a real weakness in understanding it. I don't think as a community, I don't think we understand it very well. And so what I'm talking about in Wisconsin is entirely about skaters and about puck locations, but it's motivated in large part by trying to understand goaltending, where we're trying to get a handle on what things go into goaltending and what things don't. And so that part and parcel of that is literally analyzing, tearing apart which pieces of the game should be correctly understood as appertaining to this set of people and which pieces to those people. So that problem is the central one for me.
Very good. Very good. Micah, what advice would you have for anyone who came to you looking to get involved with sports analytics?
Well, not to be too meta, but my largest advice would not be to take too much advice from any one person. There is a community, there's a whole pile of people doing excellent work, but there isn't a coherent pattern which says if you do these things then you will succeed in sports analytics. It's an entirely new field. The people who are doing it are making everything up entirely as they go along, some successfully, some not, some with no clear successes yet. And so in that kind of uncertain environment, more than anything else, what you need rather than specific advice is to keep your wits about you and be flexible about what you can do. You know, there's some pieces of advice which I think are purely generic, which can never go wrong. You know, always know who you're writing to, when what kind of audience you have in mind when you write stuff. You know, focus on conveying your ideas clearly, no matter what methods you use. Don't be condescending. You know, keep your statistical methods rigorous. You know, that kind of thing. I think everybody agrees on that. But more than anything else, keep your mental attitudes flexible about what kinds of things you need to do to succeed, and what sort of environments you find yourself in. So Twitter is by far the best place to find me. So you can find my work on my website, like you say, which is great. But if you want to find especially work in progress, I post it on Twitter a great deal. My handle is a joke on how I could never get a tenure track math job. And so it's called @ineffective math, all one word. It's sort of tongue in cheek. But there is the occasional musing about mathematics if you like that kind of thing. Still, the old habits die hard. Yeah. But Twitter, it's to my great surprise, the godmother of one of my children convinced me to get a Twitter account. She likes Twitter for reality, talking about reality TV with her friends. She uses it in a totally different way than I did. And I thought it would be a cute amusement. And instead, it's turned into the engine of my career. It's really remarkable how journalism and research and community have sprung together on Twitter. So it's @ineffective math. That's the place to find me.
Yeah, you're a good follow. I'll give you that. I've learned a lot in the few months I've been following you. Again, you. My guest today has been Micah Blake McCurdy of HockeyViz.com and at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference. Micah will deliver a talk titled Skater Impact on Shot Locations. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Micah.
No worries. Thank you.
All right, and thank you for listening today. Again, the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details, and make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. After you get done following it at Ineffective Math, follow us at @analyticsconf. Thanks for listening.